Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Martha Heller to the broadcast. Martha is the president of Heller Search Associates, a contributing editor to CIO Magazine, and the author of The CIO Paradox, Battling the Contradictions of IT Leadership. Her book was released in October of 2012 to considerable fanfare. For a link to purchase her book, please visit our website at forumonworldclassit.com. In Martha's role at Heller Search Associates, she specializes in helping companies hire CIOs and other IT executives across multiple industries. Prior to founding Heller Search Associates, Martha was managing director of the IT leadership practice at ZRG Partners, a global boutique executive search firm. Before establishing her career in executive search, Martha was co-founder and managing director of CIO Magazine's CIO Executive Council, a professional organization for CIOs. At the council, Martha developed programs that allow CIOs to share leadership development ideas and hiring and retention best practices. Prior to that, Martha developed and directed the CIO Best Practice Exchange, a members-only network of CIOs from top-tier organizations, as well as CIO Select, a peer-to-peer program for IT executives. Prior to joining CIO Magazine, Martha was the social sciences editor at Rutgers University Press. Martha received her BA in English from Hamilton College and her MA in English from SUNY Stony Brook. I recently caught up with Martha in her office in the Boston suburbs, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as Martha discussed how the CIO role has evolved and what skills successful CIOs will need to develop. Principle four, IT and business partnerships, as Martha emphasized the need for IT to build strong relationships with their business counterparts and how IT must be more embedded within the business, as well as some other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Martha Heller, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks very much, Peter. I have been listening to your podcasts for a long time now, and I am proud and honored to be a part of that illustrious group.
Oh, well, that's so kind of you to say. We certainly fit in very, very well. In fact, actually, one of many reasons why I was so excited in preparing for this conversation, Martha, is not only have I been a longtime reader of your many articles in CIO Magazine, and I know you as someone who has advised CIOs, written about them as aforementioned, you've placed them in high positions as part of your search practice, and now you've synthesized a lot of what you've learned into a terrific book, The CIO Paradox. For those listeners who've not read it, you should certainly give it a read. And you can find, by the way, a link to purchase it on our site, forumonworldclassit.com. And we'll get to the book in a moment, but I wanted to start off a bit more generally. How, in your mind, has the position of CIO evolved over the years in which you've been in touch with and advised the many CIOs that you know?
That's a great question, Peter. You know, if we look back to the sort of advent of the CIO role, which is around the mid-80s, or at least we at CIO Magazine like to say that because that's when the magazine was founded. We like to align the birth of the CIO role with the birth of the CIO magazine for our own reasons. But, you know, really, first, the role was really about being a technologist. And I always call it the accidental CIO, where somebody somewhere in some department kind of put something on a spreadsheet, and before you knew it, they were the first CIO. And the skills required to be a CIO at that time were technology skills. Believe it or not, CIOs actually needed to know a thing or two about hands-on technology at that point. Then along came off-the-shelf software, and it became about project management. CIOs started to evolve a bit where they became more, you know, large-scale project managers. Along came ERP, and it was more about business process change and business process reengineering. And of course, you know, this evolution wasn't perfectly linear. Evolutions rarely are, but you kind of get the drift. Along came outsourcing, and that was another skill that CIOs needed to develop. Now, with cloud and social and mobility and all of that, you know, the technology renaissance that we seem to find ourselves in now, it is not business process reengineering anymore. It's actually business model reengineering. It's business model invention. It's innovation. So where CIOs used to be technologists, it's not even now that they need to have business acumen, which of course they've needed to develop over the years. It goes one step further from understanding the business and contextualizing technologies in the goals of the business. It's about changing the business, not changing the way the business does what it does, but changing what the business does. I talked to a CIO of a large farm equipment manufacturer, and he is starting to develop a product line of usage analytics so that their customers understand the usage of these products. So if a big farm machinery manufacturer is becoming a data company, then those CIOs have a very different skill than what they used to have. It is not about technology alone anymore. It is about business model innovation, and that creates a real challenge for CIOs whose best thing is technology and operations management.
Well, Martha, it's very interesting. And as I hear you tick off across the years, in some ways, the most fundamental issue that the CIO had to resolve or had to grapple with, one of the complexities that comes to mind is everything that you mentioned in that several stages that you just walked us through, none of them have actually gone away in terms of responsibilities. In fact, every one of them represents kind of a new plateau that they reach, and only to find that there's a yet more mountain to climb. I suppose that translates then that the position of CIO is ever increasing in its complexity. Is that fair?
That's exactly right. And it brings us, of course, as most things do for me, to a paradox. and the paradox is the strategy versus operations paradox. So, you know, I've come up with a whole bunch of paradoxes, and every time I talk to a CIO, I seem to add a few more to the list. But over the last few years, I've taken about 16 different paradoxes that I feel define the CIO's role, and I put them in front of about 500 CIOs overall. And what I asked them to do was say, of these 16, which paradox hit you where you live? You know, which are the top three that you spend all of your time worrying about? And there was one paradox that always came up in the top three. It wasn't always the number one, but it was always in the top three of about 500 CIOs. And it was this: you were hired to be strategic, but you spend all of your time in the weeds. You spend all of your time on operations. I call it the strategy versus operations paradox. And your comment about, we're not doing away with the need to be technical. We're not doing away with the need to run ERP. We're not doing away with the need to run these outsourcing arrangements. We're just adding new skills and new responsibilities to the pile. So that strategy versus operations, how do I get strategic? How do I change this business? How do I build a new line of customer-facing mobile applications that's going to create new revenue streams while, by the way, 80% of my budget is still going toward operations? That paradox that has existed for CIOs really since the beginning of time is only getting more acute going forward.
Very interesting. And you've mentioned your book, The CIO Paradox, which I certainly do want to delve into. Can you talk a bit more about the genesis of this? You've talked about how initially it just occurred to you that as you were speaking with CIOs, advising them, talking with the people who were hiring them, that the kinds of things that they needed to be involved in oftentimes were paradoxical. Can you talk a bit more about the process from insight to what is now a great book that is ready for people to consume?
Sure, I would love to do that. So in 1999, I joined CIO Magazine as a writer. And what I discovered when I got there was a pretty exciting opportunity to reach out and understand a fascinating executive community of CIOs. And I started asking, as a journalist, it is an occupational hazard. As a journalist and a recruiter, it's an occupational hazard that I ask a lot of questions. And I started asking CIOs a question. When you walked into your new role, your new job, what did you find? What did you inherit? And I always heard the same thing. I inherited a mess. We had no project management discipline. Our credibility with the business was very low. People were entitled. They didn't have any business understanding. Our projects were failing, you know, all sorts of awful things. So I kept asking that question. I'm still asking that question today. I am getting the same response. I inherited a mess at pretty much the same rate. And I thought, this is crazy. These CIOs seem like smart people. They seem like they want to be successful, and they seem quite competent. How can it be that, you know, even now we're talking about generations that have passed, right? I talked to somebody in 1999, I talked to his successor in, say, 2004, and then I talked to that person's successor maybe last year, and they're all telling me that they got to clean up after the guy who came before them. So, you know, one guy I just talked to the other day, a new CIO of a large company, told me it was like an archaeological dig going back through all the decisions the CIOs prior to him had made. So that was one question that I really had. It was sort of a burning question. How can it be that these smart, driven people are not improving, you know, their infrastructures and their operations for the next person who comes along? That was one question that I was asking. Another question is, I would ask CIOs, do you have a successor? Do you have somebody who can, you know, if you win the lottery or move on, who can step into your shoes? And the majority of them said, yes, I do. A lot said, you know, I got a couple of years more of development, but a lot of them said, yes, I got somebody ready to go. Well, the vast majority of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies do not honor that succession plan. So why is it that CIOs are raising these successors only to have the CEO go outside and replace them? So that was another burning question. I had a lot of burning questions. I'm just going to bring up one more. And the third is, why is it that technology can bring a company to its knees? We have seen, even just in the last year, all sorts of data security breaches that have meant very bad public image for companies. And then we've also seen technology completely reinvent companies that were on their last legs. So technology can make a company or break a company, and yet corporate boards very rarely appoint CIOs. I have a colleague who has only done corporate board searches. That's, he's a recruiter just for corporate boards, and he has never, in the 500 searches he's done, he has never been asked to recruit a CIO, and he has never placed a CIO on a board. You know, I was somewhat incredulous about these unanswerable questions, and as I started to think through it, I recognized that a paradox was at play. So I started a column in CIO Magazine called The CIO Paradox, and then a little over a year ago, a publisher approached me and said, you know, you should turn this into a book. And I thought, oh, that'll be easy. I thought, no, no problem. I'm a writer. I'll wake up an hour early. Maybe I won't work out, you know, quite as long. And, you know, it turned out to be more of a considerable effort than that. But the genesis really was talking to CIOs and recognizing that despite their phenomenal talent, the situation has not seemed to improve on a micro level or on a macro level. That was really the impetus around writing this book.
That's fascinating. And you talk in the discussion of the paradoxes of the relationship between the rest of the organization and the CIO. And as one of so many hats that you wear as the president of Heller Search Associates, engaged by companies to hire CIOs, across your time running that organization and your involvement in search activities more generally speaking, do you find that those who hire you, that is oftentimes the future bosses of the person you will place, that they have a keener understanding of what is needed as the searches have progressed? Or is the understanding of IT and the needs in finding a leader, are they still left wanting a bit?
I hate to say it, but I have not seen any improvement in the clarity on the part of the executive committee, be it the CEO, the CFO, whoever's hiring the CIO. I have not seen any improvement in their clarity over what this role is. And it's no wonder, you know, and I'm going to get back to your question in a second, but I just have to say, you know, right now we're at a point where technology is becoming as pervasive to a company's operations and its product development, its customer interface as a concept like money, right? Everybody in a company touches money. They deal with money. Yeah, the CFO, you know, has the controls around money, you know, has the responsibility toward any regulatory affairs around money and maybe set standards around budgeting practices. But money is hardly, you know, relegated to the CFO function or the finance function. Money belongs to all of us when we're in a company. Technology is becoming that. Technology is becoming as pervasive as air. And so it is no wonder that it's a little confusing to a CEO who's saying, well, on the one hand, I can't get corporate email on my iPhone. And on the other hand, we're losing market share to this new software as a service provider. And those challenges both belong to the CIO. And that's a pretty heady range of responsibilities. And so it is no wonder that CEOs get a little confused when it comes to understanding what kind of CIO they need. Also, the CIO profession is still kind of young. I mean, CFOs have to have been around, I would guess, since at least the 18th century. You would really have to debate whether you had CIOs, you know, in the 15th century. But either way, you had them for a long time. We haven't had, you know, we haven't had, CIOs are like adolescents. And I, as the mother of two adolescents, I can tell you sometimes I don't really understand them. So it's no wonder, but I will say that notion that CIOs need to be business executives and technologists, that paradox lands squarely on the executive table when they're defining the CIO role. I'll just give you a quick anecdote. We were recruiting a CIO for a very large manufacturing company, and we found somebody fabulous, and she did extremely well through the interview process, great cultural fit, hit it off particularly with the president of the major business unit of this company, and everybody loved her, very business oriented, and they were, you know, deciding whether or not they were going to pull a trigger and make her an offer. And the president of the company said to me, you know, I really like her, I like all this, but I just have one question. Is she technical enough? And I thought, like, is she going to review code? What are we talking about? Is she technical? And it took us a while to really even understand what she meant by that question. And the fact is, this president didn't really understand. She just knew CIOs are supposed to be technical. So I think there's a lot of confusion among the executive committee about what this role is supposed to be. And I think the onus is really on the CIOs in some cases to define their own role, because you cannot be excellent operationally and be an innovator and take personal accountability for the CEO's iPhone. It's just too broad a role.
And that segue nicely, Martha, to my next question, which is, for those CIOs that you have placed who've been particularly successful, what are some of the characteristics that have set them apart? What are some of the keys to their success and their longevity?
So I will absolutely break this down a little more granularly than the very flip answer I'm about to give you. First I'll give you the flip answer, then I'll give you the serious answer. So I had the opportunity to see Tom Murphy, who then was the CIO of AmerisourceBergen. He's now the CIO of DaVita, and I believe you know him, Peter.
Absolutely, past interviewee, I'm very happy to say as well.
Yes, exactly. And I had the opportunity to see him give a keynote at a CIO conference several years ago where he talked about, and I actually recount this in my book, he talked about selling the board on an ERP investment that the board was not at all initially excited about and how he went through selling it. And Tom is so personable, has such good executive presence. He understands in depth the technology issues that he's dealing with, but he also understands the business piece. He's a great guy. Everybody wants to be around him. I mean, he's breaking the paradox left and right. And then I thought, after I saw him, I thought, oh, I know what it takes to be a great, successful CIO. You have to be awesome. You have to be, right?
Is that all?
That's it. You just have to be fantastic. I mean, you and I, Peter, we collaborated on an article about, you know, the future CIO, and we both joked and said, you know, all they have to do is walk on water and, you know, they're good to go. So I think it takes a very, very special blend of skills to be a very successful CIO. And I would wager the only role that commands as special a set of skills to be successful is the CEO role, in my opinion. That's the one that rivals it. It takes a pretty heady skill set to be a successful CEO. But, you know, the ones who have been successful have mastered a number of things. One is, they know how to sell the board, sell the executive committee on foundational improvements. Everybody wants to pony up resources for the new thing, for the mobile app, for the cool new thing, for social media technology support for a new social media campaign. But, you know, analytics, people will pony up money for business intelligence. But when it comes to upgrading legacy systems, sunsetting systems where it's time to retire, you know, doing that work, like when my husband tells me we have to invest in our roof, and I say, but I can't host a cocktail party on the roof. Why on earth would we invest in our roof? It's the ability to explain to the executive committee why we need to invest in this infrastructure. I think that's a critical skill that CIOs need to have. That's one. Another is, it is so hackneyed and cliched at this point that we're going to like kill ourselves, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. It's relationships. If you really do not understand when a business leader in your company, when they wake up in the middle of the night and they're worried about something and you don't know what that thing is because you haven't spent time with that person and built trust with that person, you can't be successful. When I'm brought in by an executive committee to replace a CIO, and I say, okay, what went wrong? What are we trying to correct for here? One thing I always hear is, we never knew what was going on in IT. IT was a black hole. We didn't know where the money went. We never heard from them. We threw it over the wall. They never threw it back. Well, there's a major divide going on between IT and the business there, and that CIO, in a number of ways, has not developed the relationship with the business to allow for that transparency and communication. So relationships is a second one. A third way that they've been very successful, these folks I've placed who have made it work, has been in embedding IT in the business. This whole notion of a monolithic plan, deliver, run organization that's all things IT to all stakeholders is really going the way of the dinosaurs. Now it's about these beautiful blended executives who have one foot in technology and they have one foot in finance or supply chain or a division or a region, where you walk into that business's meeting and from the dialogue taking place, you can't tell who the IT person is or who the quote business person is. CIOs who set up their organizations so that they are putting that relationship with the business at all different layers of the organization, those CIOs have a much better chance at success.
That's great. As I hear you talk, I hear fantastic advice, career advice for CIOs who may have the ambition to grow the breadth of their responsibilities within their own organizations or spread their wings at some other companies as to the kinds of experience they ought to be accruing in order to make sure that they're proceeding in a way that might be more fulfilling to them.
Yeah. And let me just add to that, you know, a major challenge for CIOs over the next few years is going to be talent. I think there is a conception still in the market that because of the recession and the layoffs and the jobless recovery, that there's great IT people just out there for the picking. It is absolutely untrue. You know, right now you've got computer science enrollments at an all-time low. You have baby boomers finally deciding, okay, I am going to retire. You've got Silicon Valley hot, hot, hot again, where your brilliant technologists have a lot of choices to make. Are they going to come to your insurance company and work on your payroll system? That's probably not their best gig. And so if CIOs are not figuring out a way to grow really good blended executives, folks who get technology, but they also have a deep understanding of a company's business processes, they're not going to be competitive. And I have to tell you, I don't mean to be, you know, too dramatic here, but, you know, as a recruiter, hey, this is all good news for me, right? Because it's going to be lots of business. But as a citizen of the globe, where I think about security threats and I think about the demand for new products and I think about my daughters whose tolerance for any kind of delay in downloading anything at any time, you know, it makes me a little nervous about the global technology, you know, profession's ability to meet these demands.
Well, gosh, it certainly is becoming much more complex, as I think is a theme and thread that runs through this conversation. We've talked about a variety of trends, Martha, but I wanted to ask you more directly, as you think about the next year, two, three, in addition to some of the topics we've already raised, what are some other trends that particularly excite you as they relate back to information technology?
So a couple of weeks ago, I was on the phone with a CIO whose company had acquired many companies over the last several years and underinvested in IT. And they had never integrated any of these companies onto any kind of single platform, and that was their goal. So the CIO said that it was her strategic plan, her IT strategic plan over the next 3 years to integrate all these companies. And then she said, but about 18 months ago, she said, from every fisher and poor in the organization, there came like a tsunami coming over the beach, a wave of new technology demands that she absolutely does not have the budget for. And it's, of course, consumer technologies. So what you're talking about are, you know, the way CIOs used to roll out technologies was you would work with business leaders who had a challenge or an opportunity and come up with a technology solution, go survey the vendor marketplace, decide, are you going to go with an up-and-comer? Are you going to go with an established player? You know, test out those options and then pick one and deploy it gradually across the company. And then eventually what might happen is what you've deployed internally might even bleed back out into the consumer space. That could happen. Now it is entirely different, where anything you're going to roll out is always already widely adopted outside the company. So you are in real catch-up mode before you even get going. So while in answer to your question, what is very, very exciting to me are obviously, and I ask this question, by the way, of the CIOs I interview, and almost all of them say either consumer technologies, mobility, or data analytics, you know, BI, big data. Those seem to be the answers right now, and I would agree with that. You know, I think the way, you know, my teenage daughter can design her expensive pair of jeans on her phone while she's waiting in line at another store to buy an expensive sweater. And then I talked to a healthcare CIO the other day who had developed a pedometer, an iPhone app, you know, an application pedometer, so you could check your biometrics while you walk around. And I talked previously in this conversation about the agriculture machinery CIO who's in the information business. So the way every company is becoming a technology company, that is absolutely fascinating to me, and that is, you know, absolutely what I'm most excited about as a recruiter, as a consumer, and as a citizen of the world. But for every moment that that is exciting to me, it makes me worried for the CIOs who may not have what it takes to be a part of that, but it makes me very, very excited for the CIOs who do. Because the CIOs who do have what it takes to lead in what seems to me to be a greater inflection point than where we were with the digital revolution of the late 90s, man, they have an eye toward customer behavior and product development and business and markets that I think rival any other executive.
That's great. Well, Martha Heller, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been such a fascinating conversation, drawing from the very deep well of experience that you have in advising and writing about and placing CIOs. Thank you so much for sharing your insights through this conversation.
Well, thanks, Peter. I appreciate it. And of all the hats that I wear and of all the things that I do, my very favorite thing is talking about myself. So I really appreciate your giving me that opportunity.
I'm glad I could facilitate that.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat helps customers gain control of their business processes by connecting them to an ecosystem of innovation. Customers' expectations change every day, which demands improved business flexibility, agility, and customer service just to keep up. Learn more at redhat.com/promo/integrated_enterprise. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Kuhl, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.